Welcome to the Art Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. The 2016 Wildwood Academy for Music and the Arts, WAMA, opens today. This is the third annual program, divided into three categories of students: advanced, intermediate, and beginners, in orchestral and vocal instruction. Daniel Black is director for the orchestral sessions, June 12th through July the 15th. He is from Fort Worth, associate conductor for the Fort Worth Symphony. Dr. Bevan Keating is the overall artistic director and also director of the vocal sessions, June 20th through July 22nd. He is my guest and refers to his current position relative to his joining WAMA in 2015.
It was nice to be part of the program last summer. I came in basically to establish the vocal side of the WAMA program. Mm-hmm. And things went quite well. And Leslie and I worked very well together. So we said, well, let's work together on the entire program, which includes, of course, the instrumental side of things as well. So a little bit of a head start because I had knowledge and I had been at the facility and seen how the classes went for the instrumental program.
Yeah.
And, of course, planned the vocal part. So it was interesting to try to put the two ideas together.
Now, do you have a board that some of these things have to go through when you're being appointed as artistic director?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Leslie has to go through a board. And, of course, I imagine everything has to go through the proper channels so that organizational structure of WAMA itself, how is it connected to Wildwood as the larger entity?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, WAMA is its own standalone, supported by lots of scholarship foundations. And then it's run by Wildwood through that program. So
Yeah. They're
connected, but the larger overarching organization is Wildwood itself.
Last year, it seems to me, and the year before, the program started with the juniors, with the people who got very little musical knowledge. And then it built up to the advanced so that it sort of showed the early stages, how it was built, each session. But this one, I see you start with the advanced.
Yes. Sometimes things go with scheduling of guest artists and of our guest conductors and faculty. So that's perhaps why we're starting with the advanced to begin with. And also, there are many programs throughout the state, like Governor School, that we have to make sure we move our calendar around to fit. So it seems like a better opportunity for advanced students to participate in June versus in July.
Right. And another one that would, I think, show the success in some ways of the year before, are you getting some return students?
Yes. And what is interesting, again, I got to slow myself down sometimes, that this is my third year for establishing the program. That means if someone joined us as a 7-year-old, they're only 10 at the most at the moment. So therefore, I have to see that there is a progression of students who continue to come back. Their skills are better. They understand what we're asking of them. And I think they continue to participate in their own schools, which is the most exciting part. So a lot of the students are coming back. And when they do come back, they're at a higher level. So in 10 years, that 7-year-old is 17. And then they will hopefully be at the advanced, at the upper level. And that's when you reevaluate and say, have we been able to show a continuous music education model from 7 through 17?
So last year, when you had the advanced at the end of the sessions, mm-hmm. did you have some ready to go on to a facility that would build upon what you'd already set in place?
Well, most successful students who, let's say, were juniors or seniors, specifically some seniors, and we're not going to take all the credit for this, but we will say that we were able to enhance the music education, have indeed gone on to get scholarships at large institutions. We have a young man named Eric who has done a lot of conducting and playing. He plays trumpet in the Youth Symphony here. Takes private lessons and is part of his church program and was one of the founding members of the WAMA program. In other words, one of the students who came through us, maybe grade 9, grade 10. And he has a full scholarship at Florida State on his instrument. One of our singers was a senior student last year, and he has a full scholarship at a local university here in Arkansas. And happily enough, one of our juniors now has a chancellor scholarship at UALR as a vocalist who came through our program starting last year. Of course, I always try to remind everyone that it's not just the private teacher, it's not just the high school, it's not only the organization that may be involved with, such as a WAMA, but as a community, we're able to offer all these experiences that help them get to that next level.
Yeah. Now, I was looking at some of the information I was sent.
Yes.
And I saw the number of days and weeks that are allocated mm-hmm. to the different sessions, the intermediate instrumental and vocal just have a four-day session mm-hmm. each. The very beginners have 1 week, which I think is very reasonable
yes.
because they have to take in a lot. 4 days, can you achieve that much in just 4 days?
Well, we have this funny thing. For me, I have Canada Day, July 1st, so that's okay. Independence Day is July 4th, which falls on a Monday. So we ran into some issues of family traveling and time. Now, the 4 days, what we did to get the most of our instruction within those 4 days, when normally it would be five, is to expand their day, which was originally from 9 to 3, and we're now going from 9 to 5. So those 2 extra hours each day times 4 is 8 hours. So that's how we're trying to get back that day. It just happened to fall on the week of the most important holiday during the summer.
Of course, of course. When things get shelved so they can enjoy the
yes,
holiday.
Yes, and you know, summer is always, we think, sometimes a downtime for families and students who are taking music, but actually it's very busy. If they are, you know, part of the church program, which there are many lovely ones, there's a great program that the Youth Symphony does as well. We have all coordinated our dates so that they can participate in all of them. And many of the kids choose to do that. In fact, some of our faculty are teaching them both. Kirill Laskaroff will be our string teacher for the WAMA program for the advanced, and a wonderful addition to our faculty. And so when you have these days of 9 to 5 for the advanced, a lot can be done. In the intermediate level, 9 to 5 is a great start. We're talking about middle school to maybe freshman year of high school. They need that intense education, music contact with a faculty member or a staff member, but they're still fairly young. And I think a lot can be accomplished if they're exposed to great faculty, hearing a wonderful concert, seeing what other kids their age are doing. They will then be inspired to come back the next year. So definitely we can inspire them in that short week.
Then the guest artists that you go seeking, mm-hmm. how far in advance do you have to get in touch with them so that they can
are available?
You, yeah.
It's a never-ending process. The contracting us guest artists, I've come to appreciate how difficult that can be, even arranging flights. For example, we have an exciting group called WindSync that is coming in. It's a very different kind of an ensemble. Had a great string quartet last year come in from Chicago. We played the Governor's Mansion, beautiful concert. But we found that we would like to have an ensemble that mirrored who was coming to our advanced and intermediate camps. So that means there might be a French horn player, there could be a bassoon player, there would be a clarinet player, and of course strings. So this WindSync ensemble is actually based out of New York and based out of Houston. Well, it's 5 different players. So trying to get them organized through their agent, yes, they can say to us, we can come these days, but we're trying to fly them from all different corners of the continent. And those are the difficulties that mm-hmm. you really have to plan out.
Now, when would they come in? At the beginning or the end?
They're coming in during the advance week, WindSync, because that's when the top players, that's where I believe that one-on-one contact with a professional, especially these are young professionals. In other words, they can look at them and not see someone my age and go, well, I can't do that. They're 20 years older than I am. Or they don't relate, perhaps. But if they see someone within 10 years or 15 years, they can see that and ask them the question, how do I go from Arkansas, Little Rock, private lessons and perform in New York and Houston and San Francisco and Chicago? They can ask those questions. What do I need to do? And I think they're more free to ask because they're closer in age.
Now, WindSync, is it all wind instruments?
And percussion. There's a percussion player as well. And then our next guest artist goes towards the vocal side, and I'm very excited about this man. His name's Curtis Sullivan. He actually hails from Toronto, so he's a colleague of mine from days past. He worked with an opera group called Opera Italia, which is a specialized opera group specializing in French literature, also French dance and movement, and everything they do is very creative and interesting. Of course, he performed in Tokyo, Paris, San Francisco. He is a top-line baritone from Canada. And he's going to bring his experiences to our singers here. And he comes in the week after the WindSync group.
And so they have this one-on-one chance to talk as well as to hear them perform professionally.
Absolutely. And we set up a day where our guest artists come in and they will perform for them for, let's say, 15, 20 minutes. Okay, in an intimate setting. In other words, they're going to share the stage. At Wildwood has a wonderful facility, as you know, for staging. It's actually a great facility for rehearsing on the stage. You take the stage and you flip it, and you have your guest artist play, and the students are on the stage with them observing and listening. During the day, they will have ensembles, the students, and then the guest artists come in and they actually mentor from within the ensemble, as our faculty does. Mm-hmm. And then they'll play for them for 15, 20 minutes, and that's when the respect or the inspiration happens. How on earth can you do these things? And then we have master classes where, for example, we have a French horn student coming, and he will get to work with the French horn player from WinSync, and they have that one-on-one time together. At the end of that first week and end of second week, our students then perform for their family and friends and the general public. But they've had this coaching that's gone through Monday through Friday when they perform. And what you usually see is technically, yes, they're stronger. You can technically get stronger to a certain point in 1 or 2 weeks. However, it's the connection to the music and the inspiration that flourishes within that time.
And the conversations with musicians.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes, as I said, we are a community trying to raise musicians and artists, or at the very least, music appreciation within our community. But, you know, when you talk to Dr. Keating again and again and again and again, because he's your contact or your music teacher or your private instructor, it's very refreshing and can be inspiring to have someone who comes from New York or Houston or outside of our community say some of the same things, because mm-hmm. it reinforces what they're learning in their studio or in their school. But most importantly, it gives them an insight to what is possible. You know, there is someone who plays the clarinet and makes their living as a clarinet player. There is someone who sings and makes their living as a singer. Sometimes difficult to tell, especially high school kids, these are possibilities for a profession and for life experiences mm-hmm. when, as you know, lots of the times they're told, well, at the very best, play it on the side, play in the marching band, or go sing in choir, you like it. But, you know, you need to look at different education possibilities, because one day you need a job.
Now, given that they have that, you mentioned faculty. Mm-hmm. Who are the faculty?
I'll give you a mention of some of them. Kirill Laskaroff will be one of our strings. Yeah. Barry McVinney is mm-hmm. going to be doing our winds. Lovely, incredible player. And I'm excited about Barry because he's what I would call, he has the ability to cross over. He guests several times with the ASO Classical Music. He plays all over the city as a jazz musician. And he's hired continuously at the Rep Theater to play in their bands when the guest artists come in. And is always hired when a touring group comes in. He's just on that list. And he's so dependable, so well-loved, and he plays so well. Now, there is something as a young student I wasn't made aware. You know, I can work in 3-4 different locations. I can work at the Repertoire Theater. I can work at the ASO. I can work at the Afterthought. Sad to say, the Afterthought may not be with us forever. It sounds like that jazz club is not going to be with us. But Barry plays all over the state. That is interesting for a student to say, wow, you do this as a living? Mm-hmm. You pay your mortgage. You've had children. You've had family. And this is what you do. And Barry's one of those faculty can say, yes, take a look at what I do. This is how I got there.
And last year when we were talking about the vocal and what you were doing, I mentioned opera in the Ozarks.
Yes. Great program.
Yes.
Even in my time here, I've been in Little Rock now about 10 years, we've had students go through from several universities that I've had connections with where they've done their undergraduate. They now have completed their master's, and they are now in what you call young artist programs or young professional programs. And something like opera in the Ozarks, it's been, you know, those are the programs which you see at the next level. And I would love to see at some point, 10, 15 years, you know, a collaboration between the WAMA summer program and Opera in the Ozarks. Mm-hmm.
So Daniel is coming in
earlier. He's going to come in June 10th. On one day before the camp starts, we'll do assessments for instrumentalists. Part of the program that we do, as well as solo, you know, classes and master classes, and of course the orchestra ensemble, is chamber works, especially for the older students. So we'll sit down, we'll evaluate the students, and then divide them up into small quartets, quintets, trios, and give them another set of repertoire that maybe they wouldn't get the chance to do in a school setting. So again, just another way to expand their horizons. And we'll assess our students, and starting on the Monday, we'll go straight through into our first rehearsal at 9 o'clock in the morning.
And that's another 2-week session.
Yes, ma'am.
So they really will achieve quite a bit.
They will.
Now, to branch off towards maybe more in the intermediate, the elementary school that you had access to last year, is that still available?
Yes. There's a great partnership between the schools which are in around Wildwood itself and the schools there. The board and Wildwood have been working together closely. And it's just not for WEM as well. They have almost all year programming with Angela Collier and Leslie dividing up a system where they visit their schools and the schools come into campus. In fact, last week I went into Wildwood and there were probably 400 students doing what they call a poetry slam. And all these kids, they had 20 finalists on the stage and they had written their poetry and they were presenting it to 400 people. And you would think, Anne, these grade 5, grade 6 students, we were at a rock concert. It was on fire. They were excited. Everyone had written, you know, the public speaking was taking to a whole new level. And that's another opportunity that, you know, Wildwood and this association with the schools around them are able to create. It's really exciting.
That was Dr. Bevan Keating, Artistic and Vocal Director for the 2016 Wildwood Academy for Music and the Arts, WAMA, which opens today, running June 12th through July 22nd. The Advanced Orchestral Session, directed by Daniel Black, set for June 12th through 24th. For more information, call Angela Collier, 501-821-7275, extension 253, or online, angela@wildwoodpark.org. This is further to the mention last Sunday of the 1623 folio edition of Shakespeare's works on exhibit in Conway, June 7th through July 12th. Rebecca Scallet, Artistic Director of Arkansas Shakespeare Theatre, describes this historic document, the book that gave us Shakespeare, and how we have it here in Arkansas. So the folio, How on earth did you get this?
Well, it's actually part of a national program that's being done by the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. And they, in honor of the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death, wanted to bring a copy of Shakespeare's first folio to every state in the United States.
How new is the copy?
It's from 1623, so it's one of the original printings. I believe the Folger Library has something like 60 in their library, and there are maybe 10 that they're taking out and touring across the U.S. This is the first time they've ever done anything like this, to take their copies out of the protected environment of the library and send them out so that everybody can see them, whether they can make it to D.C. or not.
So these copies, as you call them, are actually within the scope of the year when they were printed in the first?
Yes, copies is probably the wrong word. Yeah. There were, I think, something around 200 editions printed of first, this is the first compilation of all of Shakespeare's plays. Mm-hmm. And so there was a limited run in this first 1623 year. So those are the first folios from the very first printing. There aren't that many remaining.
Yeah.
So this is one of those few.
So 1600s onwards, you're very close to Shakespeare's time.
Mm-hmm.
And when the plays were actually performed, who kept the scripts originally?
Well, that's a really good question, and we don't really know the answer to that. There are different types of papers that we have, not anything that we would consider really an original manuscript from Shakespeare. So we don't know how exactly he wrote. There were sides that were created for the actors to work from, but those only contained their cue line and their part. It wasn't a complete script. And then there would be sort of actor managers. There wasn't any such thing as a stage manager or a director during that time. But there would be prompt book keepers who would have all of the lines. And then during Shakespeare's lifetime, there was some printing of his work that we call quarto editions, the early editions that were sort of they were printed in a smaller format. It was just one play at a time and not as formally bound. And those were distributed as well. And there are many of Shakespeare's plays that we have in quarto format. And then with the folio, that was published after his death. And it was published by some of his friends and fellow actors who thought that Shakespeare's work was important enough that they needed to bring it all together and publish it in a more formal and more permanent way, which is how the folio came to be. And there are actually several plays in the folio that don't exist anywhere else, that were never printed in quarto, that we don't have any other kind of manuscript form of. So these friends of Shakespeare's brought the text with them, and we're not sure exactly, again, where it came from. It's always a question of what's the true authorship of this work.
And of those few that you've just mentioned, mm-hmm. how many are now accepted as, and some of the ones that are never performed,
mm-hmm.
are they equally accepted?
Yes, everything in the folio, I mean, this is not my area of expertise, yeah. but I believe everything in the folio is generally accepted as being the work of Shakespeare.
And what does it mean exactly, the difference between quarto and folio?
So quarto, it refers to the size of the printing. So it's a smaller size printer, and that had to do with the size of the paper and the machines that they were printing it on, whereas folio is a very large format, think like an old-fashioned encyclopedia kind of a size, and contained all of the plays together bound. So that was the main difference. The quarto was one play by itself. The folio was the larger edition and put all the plays together.
And this was paper of a quality that survived?
Yes, yes.
Because you think now of what comes out printed as paper.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you try to control the environment and you feel that it's a book worth keeping, they don't last.
Mm-hmm.
But this type of material that they seem to be able to use in terms of who made the paper, where did it come from? And you read into the wider history of the world, and places like China and Arabia had quality papers and things that they put out
mm-hmm.
that seemed to be even better quality than was happening in the Western world, such as it was.
Mm-hmm. I do not know about the paper quality of the folio, but I know that one of the goals of printing it was to have something that would last.
Yeah.
That they wanted there to be a form of Shakespeare's plays that would be something that people would hold on to and that would survive into generations.
And how come America has so many of them?
Well, the Folger Library collection was started as a private collection. The Folger family that had an interest in Shakespeare and started to collect them on their own. And then once the library was founded, they have sort of become the gathering place for all, as many primary sources and research materials related to Shakespeare. They're one of the main locations for that in the U.S.
And where exactly is it located?
It's in Washington, D.C.
Was it always in Washington?
The library has always been in Washington, as far as I know. I'm not sure. I think the Folger family may have lived there too, but I don't know about that.
It's amazing. How come you were able to get one here?
So they had this idea to bring an edition of the folio to every state in the United States, and they basically set it up like a grant. So we applied, we wrote a grant and had to say why we wanted it to come to UCA and to Arkansas Shakespeare Theater and what kind of programming we would do, and we won. We won the grant to bring the Folger to our campus.
And then you were able to tie it in with the Arkansas Literary Festival?
Well, we did, at the Literary Festival, we did a panel presentation about the folio, and the idea was for it to sort of be a preview and to provide some background information on the text before it arrived. So for those who are interested, they could kind of get that background preview
now,
information.
This copy that has come, this version, this
edition.
Particular item, this edition, yes, that's better, is going to be here how long?
It's here for 5 weeks. So the exhibit will be open from June 7th through July 12th. And it's free and open to the public.
Where is it?
It's at the Baum Gallery of Art on the UCA campus.
Do you have to apply to get in there?
No, it's all free and open to the public. It'll be open Tuesday through Saturday from 12:30 to 7:30. And we picked the hours specifically to align with our plays. So if someone was going to come see a 7:30 performance of Midsummer, let's say, they could come a little early and check out the folio as well. We really, when we did our application to bring the folio here, we put the Shakespeare Festival forward as a big part of that so that people can see the productions and see the work and have those two things happen together.
And do you know how old this particular one is?
1623.
Goodness gracious. Yes. So is it kept in special circumstances?
It is, yes. There's a lot of rules that we have to follow in order to have it here, including the correct humidity of the room, the amount of light that's in there. And we've spent a lot of time over the past year making sure that the bomb gallery and the room in there can meet all of those requirements. And then in addition to that, it travels in its own special humidity-controlled case.
With special people supporting it as it comes?
Well, there's a special person that will bring it and install it, and then they go away and leave it in our care. We'll have security there every time that it's open because it's a very valuable book as
well. Of course, yes.
And then they'll come back, and the special people will come back and take it away.
So are there enough to fulfill the requests from the states?
Yes, they have enough, and it's traveling throughout the year, so throughout 2016. So they started, these exhibits began in January and will go through December. And I think there's something like 10 or 12 different editions of the folio that are traveling.
And will this
places.
Be a one-off? It won't be every year?
I don't think it's
century.
Going to be every year. I think it's a very expensive proposition, and I know they got a lot of grant support and support from the National Endowment for the Humanities to be able to do it. Because to just for the book to travel with all of the special needs, the insurance and all of that, it really has a lot of requirements and cost associated with it.
Yeah. But worth seeing.
Absolutely worth seeing. I've had the honor to see it at the Folger Library myself, and I find it to be a very moving experience to be so close to this document. It was published after his death, but sort of the closest that we have to getting to Shakespeare, this piece, and it's where his words come from. And to think we wouldn't have Something Wicked This Way Comes
right
unless this book had been printed and survived. So it's very special, very important.
And what about, you said, to be able to see the play that you'll be seeing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Who touches the pages?
Well, actually, you won't be able to see the play itself because no one is allowed to touch the pages. So the book will be, it's open to be or not to be from Hamlet. So that will be the page that people can see and look at. And the Folger decided that as sort of the a major representative of one of the most important speeches that Shakespeare has given us. But we will also have what they call a facsimile copy of the folio, which is a modern printing of the folio, but that the text looks just like the text printed on the page, and people will be able to flip through that and explore that themselves.
What a responsibility.
It is to be the caretakers of that book for the 5 weeks that it's here. But it's very, very exciting. And we're doing all kinds of educational activities surrounding it, including workshops for kids. We're going to have a workshop for teachers on how they can use the folio in the classroom. There'll be panels and other things. So it's really given us a tremendous opportunity to have all of these great educational experiences associated with our festival.
Rebecca Scallet, Artistic Director of Arkansas Shakespeare Theatre. The book that gave us Shakespeare, one of the original editions printed in 1623 of Shakespeare's collected works, is on exhibit at the Baum Gallery of Art on the University of Central Arkansas campus through July 12, 2016. Brought to Arkansas in honor of the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death and in collaboration with the Folger Shakespeare Library, Washington, D.C., Arkansas Shakespeare Theatre, and the University of Central Arkansas, the folio is on exhibit Tuesday through Saturday, 12:30 to 7:30 p.m. through July the 12th. An Art Up Special. The Arkansas New Play Festival, presented by Theatre Squared, opens June the 17th and runs through the 26th. 5 plays in rotation in Fayetteville and Bentonville. See theatre2.org. And Opera in the Ozarks, the 2016 season in Eureka Springs, opens June the 17th with Don Giovanni, Albert Herring, and the double bill I Pagliacci and Il Tabarro, performed repertory style through July the 15th. Visit opera.org. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR Public Radio.